Before we get into our long-awaited episode 31, I wanted to take a few seconds to fill in all of our loyal listeners some information about our show. We are still doing it. We did take some unexpected time off. The show that we're going to listen to now, it was actually recorded in April. We also have a show that we recorded in May, which is episode 32, and we're going to have that released within a couple weeks. Then we are going to be on a regular schedule. We're going to release shows on the 1st and 15th of the month, so that'll be every couple weeks. This is actually going to give us more time to put effort into making the podcast better than it has been before. With that said, we are always looking for editing help, so please email us if you think you can lend a hand at podcast@dragonmount.com. If you've already emailed us, email us again. Being persistent does pay off. Thanks again to our listeners for being understanding about the time we've had to take off, and enjoy our special episode 31. Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Welcome to the Fourth Age, episode 31. Believe it or not, this episode, it really is a special one. We'll talk more on that later. We're going to return to the Wheel of Time Journal this week. We're going over chapters 11 through 15 of The Dragon Reborn. We're also going to be talking about our discussion of the week about Loghain Albar. Carrie is also joining us.
Hello, everybody. For my fan feedback this week, we'll have a voicemail from Jason in Youngstown about Steadings. Ben is also here with us.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. I have a crazy theory this week. This one is pretty nuts. As Carrie said herself, this one is frackin' nuts. Also, Andrew, he's with us. He's got some very interesting news in the Wheel of Time.
Thanks, Ben. We'll be taking a break from our serial, What Were They Like in the Age of Legends, in order to get some feedback about the segment from the listening audience as we get caught up with the podcast. If you have any feedback pertaining to the news show or to any of our podcast segments, feel free to drop us a line and let us know what you think. As usual, we'll provide you with contact information at the end of the podcast. However, in the meantime, here is what you should know. It appears that one particularly entrepreneurial Seanchan is seeking rights to develop the first chain of stores in the Western lands. Ideally, these stores will import and sell a dark bitter drink called Koff, which is quite popular in Seanchan. Bale Doman, who is a partner in this business, told us, "These stores do be like their return. Pretty soon you'll be seeing a moon crowns on every city street." As expected, the tea merchants in every port have launched complaints to their rulers. Only time will tell if we will overcome this latest Seanchan menace. In other news, since the upgrade to the new server, our hosts at DragonMount.com have made a few changes in the website. As well as upgrading the look of the front page, a change has also been made to the forums with the hope of cutting down on the amount of spam that gets posted. According to Kevin, an administrator at DragonMount.com, a few months back, I made some changes in an attempt to eliminate spammers, and for a while it seemed to work. They're now back with a vengeance. For this reason, we've enacted a new technical policy. Posting links on the forums has been disabled for anyone with less than 15 posts. This is something that should happen automatically and won't require any changes on behalf of the users. Once you've posted 15 times or more, you will gain the ability to post links. Like all technical changes, this has the possibility to break things. So if for some reason you are unable to post on the forums, please send an email to help@dragonmount.com and we'll see what we can do to fix it.
Thanks, Kevin. The spam was... And continues to be a problem on the Dragon Mount forum. So I think everybody understands it, though. But besides spam on our forums, what I really want to talk about this week, I hinted at it earlier. I want to take a few seconds to talk about our first year anniversary. Believe it or not, it was on March 29th that Carrie and I started our project. Basically, we did it because no one else was doing anything like this for the Wheel of Time. You know, I myself didn't realize how much work it was going to be. But looking back on it, with all the friends that I've made over the past year, every minute, every single minute was worth it. We have a great group of friends and fellow Wheel of Time lovers that listen to each and every episode. The feedback that we get, it's quality. It really, really is. And with a few exceptions, every single part of this experience has been positive.
Yeah, definitely. I can't believe that it's been a year. That's a pretty big amount of time. We've learned so much in that year, too. When we first started, I couldn't even talk while I knew that I was recording myself because I was so nervous. I just couldn't imagine people listening to me speak about the Wheel of Time. But yeah, I think everybody's kind of learned a little bit or a lot from this experience.
Well, yeah, I came about in about, I think, episode 3 or so, 3 or 4 or something came in, and the very first night I was trying to record, I was at the radio station where I was working at the time, and I was in a room full of sophisticated radio technology, and I could not make Skype record my voice. And no matter what I did, it just would not do it. So eventually, I made a quick run to Walmart and bought a little microphone with headphones for $19.95, and the $1 million of radio technology, didn't use them, used the little $20 thing from Walmart. So that's that was the first real big experience I had. But I've loved talking about the Wheel of Time. It's a great great series. Hats off to Robert Jordan, who's just wrote, you know, so much that we can talk about. I mean, like I said, we've been doing this for a year, and there's still so much that has yet to be talked about, that can be talked about, that will be talked about in the next year or so. But yeah, it's just a mark of a great series, and that there's so many people that have passionate opinions about it. So hats off to RJ for that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I know for a fact I actually kind of stumbled on the podcast quite by accident. I was sitting at the box office where I had worked at the time and was really needing something to do, and I was looking through the usual sites I look up, including Dragon Mountain. I was just like, huh, well, I wonder what this is like, and I clicked it on, I listened, and I must have listened through at least 3 episodes that day, and I kept hearing, it's like, oh, well, we're going to have auditions for, you know, new people who want to talk about the Wheel of Time, and I was like, I want to do that, and then I missed the first deadline completely. And it was just like, well, okay, I'll keep listening, and, you know, maybe they'll throw out another one, you know, and decide to have another person on. And that time, I think I got the submission in within, like, the first 30 minutes of having been posted, because I wanted to make sure that I got a submission in there. And it's been an interesting thing, because, I mean, just through us talking, I know I've increased my, you know, depth of knowledge about the series, and my own personal theories and ideas have just, you know, started to blossom ever more frequently. So I definitely, you know, like I said, I can also believe it. It's been a year, you know, for, you know, the podcast itself. It's
I know.
Amazing.
I can't believe there aren't any other. Sorry,
oh, no,
Andrew.
No, go ahead.
I thought you were. I honestly thought there, when I went looking on iTunes, I was like, okay, there's probably a whole bunch of Wheel of Time podcasts, you know, because I know with some other podcasts, I mean, there's so many out there on any subject you want. And I couldn't believe that there was. I was like, what's going on? But when I was inquiring about it, I never actually thought that I would. I just thought maybe to help out, you know, not be a host, because I was paranoid.
Yeah, I think, when Jason, who's the website master for DragonMount.com, when him and I were first talking about it, because when I first thought about it, I sent out an email to a few different webmasters of different pages for the you know, the Wheel of Time, and I said, let's do this. You know, I want to do this, and I want the help of someone inside the Wheel of Time community to help. Jason responded back, and we were emailing back and forth different ideas, and I think Carrie had sent Jason an email, and in Carrie's email, she's like, "Oh, I'll help with the podcast. It sounds like something great." And Jason emailed me, and he said, "Well, we found a host for you." And I thought, "Well, she didn't say anything about being a host." He said, "Well, too bad she's a host."
He's like, "Which was great. Record yourself, you know, just do like a little thing." I'm like, "Well, I don't know," and you know, I'm like, I sent this email saying, "Well, I don't know. I'm, you know, not sure, you know, I could do that." And whatever, but I just got kind of ignored. Like, just do it and have fun, you know? And so I was like, okay.
And here we are a year later. Now, one thing that, Ben, one thing that you said, I remember at Dragon Con, I was doing it wasn't a recorded podcast, but it was a session for podcasters. I actually was the only person there that did a podcast about literature. We all got together about doing fan casting and doing podcasts about, things that fans listen to. And one of the questions they asked was, how do you come up with new material for your podcast every week? And when, I think I answered the question first, and I said, I have absolutely no problem coming up with material.
Yeah. Tons of material.
For any week that we do, I never have a problem because there's 1,500 characters mm-hmm. in this series of books, and I'll never, ever end, you know. So as far as getting new material, I don't think we ever have a problem with that.
With something as vast as the Wheel of Time, there, we could be doing this for a very long time. I'm sure even after Memory of Light, you know, comes out, there will still be a lot of things to talk about.
Well, yeah, he's got to write those prequels that he says he's going to do. He's going to write three prequels, so, you know, you got 2 and 3 of the prequels and talking mm-hmm. about that and going back and rehashing this. And hey, did you see he foreshadowed this in book 1 and it came out in book 12? Oh, I just made the connection, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff is so subtle. It'll take a while for us to make the connections. So, you know, all of a sudden we might just do a podcast on the connection I just made.
Yeah.
Right, there you go.
Instead of crazy theory, it's crazy connection. Ben's crazy connection.
Definitely.
By the way, Andrew, you know, whenever you said you missed your first mm-hmm. deadline, I definitely knew that that was whenever you were supposed to be in it, because you were missing deadlines just like us.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jason.
Speaking of deadlines, anyway, over the next year, we're going to make some changes to the podcast. We're working on new formats, new introductions, and new production, basically, for the podcasts. We're trying to format for live podcast too, which we're actually pretty close to doing. This week we're actually doing a little behind the scenes technical, how would you say it, beta, maybe.
There you go.
But anyway, we'll keep you updated on that. We're going to have a new feature too, which we're working on, which is called Fan Interviews, and it's exactly what it sounds like. We're going to interview fans from across the world, and I think our first fan podcast is literally going to be from across the world from myself. But anyway, and we're going to hear our fans' Wheel of Time stories. How did they get into the books? What do they think about the books? So if you'd like to be a part of it, send an email to podcast@dragonmount.com.
I can't wait till that. It's so exciting just to, you know, to have a new person, like somebody that's fresh. And because we talk about so many things, even us, before we record, I forget sometimes what we mention in the actual recording and what we talk about when we're not recording. Uh-huh. And so I think some things get left out, and just to hear somebody else's theories and thoughts. And we get mail all the time, but it's different when you're talking live to somebody and you get ideas. Like earlier, you know, one of us will have an idea and it's like, oh wait, this just came to me. And that it'll be so interesting to actually get to speak with other people that are fans of the Wheel of Time, just like us.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Everybody's got like their own, this is how I started the Wheel of Time story. I was just the other day, I just ran into somebody at the bookstore. I was like, you know, I was looking at the big white book that they had on the shelf, and it's like, you read that? Yeah, I read The Wheel of Time. Oh, I love The Wheel of Time. Told him about the podcast. He's like, oh my gosh, I started reading the books just like 3 weeks ago. They were so cool. I got them at school, and they're like, you know, so it's cool swapping stories like that of The Wheel of Time. It, mm-hmm. It brings people together. It sounds cheesy, but it really does happen. It's cool.
Yeah, and I mean, also on that same vein, you know, you talk about meeting people, you can go to, you know, amazing places. I know, you know, this past weekend I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is, a good 9-hour drive from home, and, just randomly ran into somebody, and I happened to be mentioned something. I mentioned one of the characters, and as I often do in obscure references, and I immediately, we just started striking up this conversation about the series, and I'm just like, oh, hey, have you ever listened to The Fourth Age? I kind of do the old shameless plug for myself, because I'm a shameless self-promoter, and
shameless plugs are nothing. If it, I've had a few people that have messaged me or whispered me in World of Warcraft that said, "You're the guy from the Fourth Age of Wheel of Time," So I've made a lot of friends actually that way. A few different friends, just talking to people through something that I mentioned in passing, in the podcast. So, and at Dragon Con, I met a ton of people that love Wheel of Time and are just as passionate about Wheel of Time than we are. Because I think sometimes when you think, well, we're doing this podcast, but is anyone else really even thinking about this any time? Well, yeah, they are. Mm-hmm. So that's it really is a fantastic feeling to get a real community that read some books. And I say some books lightly because there's not just some books. There's 12 of them,
Yeah. So.
Welcome to Jason's Wheel of Time Journal. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Jason's Wheel of Time Journal. For this journal, we're going to be talking about chapters 11 through 15 of The Dragon Reborn. In the first chapter that we get to, which is chapter 11, the characters that we're going through in this chapter are Baron, Egwene, Elaine, Nynaeve, Huron, and Matt. They all arrive at Tarvalon. Matt obviously is suffering a great deal of sickness from the dagger. Huron takes his leave at this point, and I thought it was sad because Huron's one of my favorite characters. But he does take his leave to go. He reports back to Lord Angmar what really happened at Falme. The girls and Matt, they all go to the White Tower, and when they arrive, Varen, of course, she goes to speak with Swan Sanche, and the others are told to wait until they are summoned, so they go to their rooms and they wait. Swan is waiting for Varen when Varen gets there. Varen, of course, tells Rand about him declaring himself being the dragon, and at this point, Varen gives her the Horn of Valyr. She says she'll hide it where only the two of them know. And, well, not a lot of people talk about this on forums, on email posts, but we never hear anything else about the Horn again. Presumably, at least, until the last book. We don't know where it is. It's never mentioned again, which is really interesting. Varen also lets Swan know that the Seanchan have returned and that they do use the One Power in battle. And then she talks about everything, of course, that happens with the girls. And then we move in to the point of view of Egwene and Elaine. They're talking to each other through a hole in their wall when Fowlane busts in. And then they all go to the Amaryllis seat, Egwene, Elaine, and Nynaeve, I should say. Swan is at her desk when they get there. Elaine tells her that Leandrin is Black Aja. And they have some back and forth about who is and who isn't, but for their punishment for leaving the White Tower, they're actually to work in the kitchen and scrub pots. But they're also raised to accepted, which is very interesting that they're being punished, but at the same time they're moving forward. Elaine is led back to her room, leaving Egwene and Nynaeve there with Swan, who wants to talk to the two of them alone. Moving on to the next chapter, Swan talks to them about the Black Aja. She considers Leanne, Sharim, Varen, and Moiraine people she can trust, of which two of them, Sharim and Varen, both of them have their own agenda, I guess you would say. The two of them have their own thing going on, and both of them are widely considered to be dark friends, but that's not a topic for this episode, so we'll leave Sharim and Varim alone, and we'll just take it for the fact that Swan trusts them, at least in this chapter. She doesn't think that the two, that Nynaeve and Egwene are Black Aja, and because of that, she's going to send them to hunt the Black Aja. She gives them two letters that allow them to do anything under the orders of the Amaryllis Seat, and Then they go back to their rooms awaiting for their first session scrubbing the pots. But anyway, Egwene and Nynaeve, they go back to Egwene's room. Nynaeve stops to check in Elaine's room. Of course, Egwene happens to stop her right before a crossbow bolt. It hits the wall right where they would have been. This chapter, to me, the third time I read it, this is one of the chapters always that stick out in my head that she saved her right at the last second. Nynaeve sees the man that shot the crossbow, and she channels the power to hold him in place. When they eventually get to where he's held with the power, they find out that he's dead. Someone stabbed him in the chest with a knife. The crossbow is gone. Sheriam happens to be coming around the corner, and they say, look, this guy just tried to kill everybody. She doesn't say much, but she does say he's a gray man in disgust. She does tell the girls that they're to talk about it to no one, and she implies that she's going to tell Swan Sanche about it. Egwene then goes back for, she says she's going back for a shawl from her room, but she really goes back to go get the bolt. And in fact, when she goes to get the bolt is gone.
Spoiler warning.
After our spoiler warning, which everybody just heard, let me give out the very first spoiler. We just talked about Chapter 15, and the person that killed the gray man that tried to kill Egwene and Nynaeve was, in fact, Isom, who we had a big discussion on, but it was Isom that killed the gray man. The only thing that's a little murky, not a lot of people know, is who removed the bolt. Did Isom go back and remove it? Which is probably likely, but at the same time, it's not insinuated or concrete that Isom was the one that removed the bolt.
I guess if he couldn't go, you know, in between the world of dreams and the real world, very possibly could have stepped in, grabbed it, stepped out again, so nobody could see him without even doing anything to mask himself, or I don't know. I always thought somebody took it, though. Like, in the tower.
Yeah, it might have been Sheriam. For some reason, I think this is a point at Elza. Elza Grinwell was there at some point during. Was it these chapters? I believe it was, where you know, they had Elza Grinwell like sort of lure them out and do some stuff. And wasn't that Lanfear sort of parading as her? I think we talked about this in a couple podcasts ago. I think it was Lanfear. I know she appeared to Matt, but I believe that she was in the tower with them as Elves, so I think it was probably Lanfear who did it.
That's true. Yeah, because she was right around that time, because exactly, that's when it could be. I don't think it was Sheriam, because I think that would be too, because the way she came around the corner, to me, that's like a red herring or something. Like, you're supposed to think that it's her, or maybe you can't trust her because she just happened to be there, you know?
If you look deeper, I think it's either Sheriam, but probably, I say it's Lanfear. But this is another thing that Jason just mentioned, and as soon as he did it, I instantly started going on Encyclopedia Watt and looking through all these things. He was right. The Horn of Valyr, once Varen and Swan talk about it, they say it's only where they know, and after that, it's only hinted that it's in the storehouse of the White Tower. We assume it's in the White Tower, but we don't actually know that, which totally surprised me. True.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that's, you know, surprised me that, you know, I mean, this is like a huge, huge, huge thing. And if it's in the White Tower, I mean, nobody in the White Tower is doing anything right now. More spoiler warnings if I need to put those up there. But, you know, later in the books, I mean, the White Tower, you know, as it's divided, it's not doing anything useful towards the last battle, and so that would really, really suck if it's there and, you know, can't be accessed because of a war.
Yeah. No, I honestly, I'm not very confident that it's actually still there. I was thinking possibly, you know, it was Varen and Suan, right? And they were the ones who said it was only going to be the two of them that know about it or know where it is. But after everything happened with Suan and all the stuff that we were led, that Varen would be led to believe, why would we think that she would still leave it in the same place? You know, she doesn't know what's going to happen. Like, she would probably take it upon herself to take the horn and put it somewhere else, you know? Or she could have it with her or something, because she left.
That might be what Rand that might them. Be what Varen's going
I bet
out
you
to
that's
do.
Exactly what she's going to find Matt, and she probably either has the horn or is on her way to get it. She, you know?
We are geniuses. We just figured it out. Sweet! Like, that, I just made the connection, like, right here. This is a live connection.
Because she said, you know, there's... said something like, I can't remember, I need to read Knife of Dreams again, but didn't she say something like, the last battle is coming and this is all I could... I can't do much more here or something, and then she left? So she's probably, I would assume, on her way to get the horn or to get Matt or both, you know, and say, come on, you're coming with me, kid. You know, you got your job to
That's
do.
That's right.
Cause it's coming, so... Or something.
That's
like,
right.
Or at least check on the horn. If she doesn't have it physically with her, I'm not sure how she could hide it, but...
Yeah.
Well, you
know,
Yeah, exactly.
And that falls perfectly within the oaths, because he has to have it for the last battle, so, I mean, she's serving him, you know, doing it for his best interest, so...
Yeah.
You know, that follows... She wouldn't be breaking her vow.
If I could say something else that has to do with... Because we get a lot of... feedback, and some of it has a lot, for some reason, always to do with, is Varen a dark friend, you know? And I know that we actually talked about this before in another episode, but I would think that, actually, I was just thinking of this right now when we were talking about this, that to me, this is like proof that she's not, because I honestly cannot see, because she knows where it is, regardless if it's still in the tower or not. Varen knows where it is. I can't see in the last book Robert Jordan doing a thing where she goes and takes it and hides it from them, you know, because she's black, Aja, or whatever. Like, I just can't see that happening. I can't, you know, that's not, there's too much to happen that they're not going to have to do the same thing that they already did. They already got the horn back once, right? I don't think at the end it's going to be taken again. So, in my eyes, that's kind of proving that Varen is on the good side. You know, she's probably a light friend instead of a dark friend, you know, or something like that.
I agree. More proof that she is, in fact, not a dark friend. Sorry, crazy theory boys.
I guess it's not really proof until we get the book, but it seems to me that it would be a little over the top to have the horn fall into the wrong hands again, you know?
Well, you know, it's like one of those, you know, just so much evidence compounding with all the other circumstantial evidence that just sort of says, no, she's not.
Yeah, definitely.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And Ben, you hit the nail on the head when you said we found something new on the podcast, because I'll be honest with you, I never read anything about this theory that Swan and Varen are the only two people in the whole world that know where the Horn of Valyr is. Obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but Swan, she hasn't mentioned it at all, so but she's probably not even thinking about it. Not that her place in the power now, her place up the food chain of the Aes Sedai is even going to allow her to get to wherever they put it.
She probably just has to put her faith in Varen, knowing that she's capable and she is able to go between both the rebels, you know, and the Aes Sedai in the tower. So she's probably thinking Varen will figure something out. Like, it's not, you know.
Yeah. Well, if she's even thinking about the last battle at all,
I sometimes
wonder.
Right.
I'm sure
that's
she is.
That's kind of my pet
but...
peeve about the White Tower. They're so irrelevant anymore, but yeah.
So Varen holds the Horn of Valyr in her hands, and she's the one person that's going to have to get it to Matt for the last battle. So she really, in my opinion anyway, she's holding the last battle in her hands, literally. And if she's Black Aja, then and the world's going to end not happily, and I don't think anybody's expects that. So there's proof enough that Varen, she's not a dark friend, because if she is, then the ending of the Wheel of Time is really going to be black.
Yeah,
so it'll
be
a messed
the
up
end, day. Literally, of the Wheel of Time. The wheel will be broken. So
who would have thought that Varen Sedai, the the parallel to Gandalf and Fizban and other mm-hmm. books would be the would be the person that holds everything in their hands, huh?
Definitely.
That's pretty cool. I'm just excited that we like figured it out just right here live. This is not pre-planned.
No, I'm sure somebody's had the same idea at some point, but I don't remember ever reading really anything about it. Everything I seem to read is always, is Varen a dark friend? You know, Varen told a lie, and, you know, things along that path.
Yeah.
Or it could be I have, you know, read things about, oh no, maybe she's a friend of the light, but I haven't really read too much about her and the horn, so...
Yeah, I've read more about her being some secret purple Aja that, you know, she's like, you know, from way back that, you know, keeps and preserves knowledge that's been there for ages and ages, like a secret Aja, kind of like the Black. I've read more about that than her actually, you know, mm-hmm. holding the horn, so.
Or as my, or as the Dragon Con friends would say, the Plaid Aja. Well, that's not the story.
Sweet.
Welcome to Carrie's Fan Feedback of the Week.
Hey everybody, it's Jason from Youngstown again. What if the last battle and the culmination of Rand's confrontation with the Dark One somehow involves turning Sheol Ghul or even various parts of the world or even the entire world, if we want to be this overarching apocalyptic thing, into one humongous setting?
Thanks, Jason. Actually, I think that's an awesome theory. I've never thought of anything like this before myself, personally. I don't think it's ever even crossed my mind that the whole world could or would or could become like a setting. That's just kind of freaky when you think about it.
Maybe we live in a setting. What do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think the world now is a setting?
And we are.
In that case, I want to find an Ogier.
That's true, because I always kind of thought of, like, as you're reading The Wheel of Time, and the way that they always start off the books, and when you're reading in the prophecies and different things where they're mm-hmm. looking back and you're in the Fourth Age, like, that maybe this is our world, you know.
That would be a cool little twist.
There's a reference, and, oh my goodness, I can't believe I can't think of where it is. I just thought of it. There's a reference to cars in The Wheel of Time. Like, literally, there's a mm-hmm. reference to cars.
Yeah, in airplanes.
And
they call
right,
them
in
so...
airplanes.
The Joe cars and the show wings.
Yeah, yeah. See, Andrew, how do you remember that stuff? I should so know that, and I just blank it out.
He's good.
It was in, which book was that in? 4 or 5? Because it was earlier on in the series.
I think it was when Rand it was in book 5.
Chatting with Osmodian?
No, it was when he was, it was,
or was that like
it was when he was
Robin?
Actually, I think, so... I'm pretty sure it was when he was in, like, in the Taran Greal, and he was going through and living his relatives' experiences as the Aiel.
Yeah, right, right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I'd like to find out all kinds of those types of things, like what the shock lamps mm-hmm. and, you know, Samael
the
talked
song.
About those, and, you know.
That's like...
Yeah, exactly. All kinds of
that's
those.
That's so cool.
Those cool things, but hopefully RJ might do that in like an encyclopedia or something that he'll sell like after book 12 is out.
So
the song has been found, and the song is All Along the Watchtower by Bob Dylan.
Wait.
No, I'm kidding. Anyway,
that would be cool
if anybody watches Battlestar Galactica, they know what I'm talking about, but that's so way off topic. So way off topic. Anyway, so, yeah, you know, are we all living in a setting? That's a great theory. I never thought about it that way, but maybe that is the way the books end.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool.
I think it's a little far-fetched.
I never really thought of it as a setting. I just always thought that, you know, this is the world and we're reading the past. Do you know what I mean? Because it kind of sounds like that, but do we have proof that there was a time that where channeling didn't exist? I think you had something about that.
Yeah, well, like in the First Age, they talked about like how sometimes like they didn't have the war and everything was peaceful, kind of like a setting, you know?
Well, they didn't know what
war
was, or they didn't even know about the Dark One, but they still channeled at that point. I mean, they still...
Yeah. I think, and I'm not positive about this, I'm pretty sure that in one of the opening poems or ending poems talking about, you know, the Dragon Reborn, where, you know, they have that, you know, sort of epic saying that they have, that's either a poem. It's in one of the books that where it talks about a fourth age Aes Sedai of the fourth age. And if there's Aes Sedai in the fourth age, there must be somebody with the ability to channel.
Right.
And had I done my research before the show, I would be able to tell you exactly where that was, but I was not quite so efficient, so I'll just have to give you a vague generality. But I think that there is going to be a, you know, at least somebody who can channel, or at least someone who calls himself an Aes Sedai in the fourth age, because I think they wrote about it, or they wrote a little introduction to one of the books.
Definitely possible. I like the idea of this theory, because it would neatly wrap up the entire, well, how is it that the population could forget about the Dark One so that everything could start the cycle over again, you know, and revert back to what we would tentatively call the First Age. The only problem that I do have with it is that if you immediately just made the entire world a setting, like, all the channelers would slowly start despairing, and then they'd all die.
Yeah.
And it kind of really sets a really kind of downer edge to something that's like, yay, we saved the world, mm-hmm. So cold.
But there's always the big but there, too.
Yeah.
We saved the world, but like, what happened?
What if it was like a slow progression and, you know, it's not like, boom, the whole world's standing, but somehow, okay, maybe it's not studying, because, like, you know, we don't know a lot of how they're made or anything really about them. So what if it's something that's a slow process where, over time, it's whatever it is that makes a studying so you can't channel or feel the power starts to happen throughout the whole world, but it's a very long process. You know, kind of like, if I'll, like, how they're saying that, you know, because Aes Sedai aren't procreating, they're not marrying, they're not having children, they're kind of, you know, washing, channeling out of the, you know, everyone, they're getting weaker, they're not as strong as they were, there's not as many as there were. So kind of something like that, except instead of it having to do with procreation, it's something else, you know, but it happens slowly something, over time.
Something physical with the world.
Mm-hmm.
I see what you mean.
So it could happen, but it could take a, you know, an extremely long time before, you know, it actually, nobody can channel, and then it could start over. Like, how many ages are there in the actual wheel itself? Is it said? I haven't actually thought about that.
That's a good question. I know at the very beginning of the first book, I just looked it up on Encyclopedia Watt, it has a person who's talking about, and the shadow fell on the land, and the world was riven from stone, talks about the breaking of the world, and they named him Dragon. And from Aelith Tin Taran Alta Kamora, the breaking of the world, author unknown, the Fourth Age. So, in the Fourth Age, we know they do have somewhere, some literature about
what happened.
What happened in the Third Age, and basically Rand's story.
It could take longer than an age to forget, and for all this stuff to happen.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's neat theory anyway. Even, you know, we'll never know until, I don't think that would happen, because we would never know about it. Or unless it's something that we could think about, you know, after, but I don't think it would happen like immediately. You know, like you said, like, it's not going to be, okay, boom, oh, nobody could channel, and the whole world's a steading, you know?
Welcome to Ben's Crazy Theory of the Week.
All right, well, in a show full of crazy theories, we've come to the, I guess you could call it official crazy theory time. I personally, I'm not sure if this is, you know, just like bad-mouthing my own segment, but I don't think this segment is going to be nearly as good as, like, the other ones, even though Carrie does say that it's frackin' nuts, which is cool if Carrie thinks it's good. You know, maybe it will be. We'll find out. I still think the fact that we just discovered a theory live on the air is even cooler. Anyway, I don't know where I got this from. In fact, I think Carrie actually found this one for me. Yes, you did, didn't you, Carrie?
It was an email.
I didn't do this one.
It was an email from...
Sweet. Thank you, whoever emailed this.
Kits.
I can't... Give you...
Yeah. I know it. Because he's emailed us before, and I think he's from the Ukraine, I think? Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's from the Ukraine, yeah.
Well, thank you.
We've used email, or I have, from him before, and I thought it was definitely very interesting. I thought it was a little bit more in your territory, though. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, my territory
I'm not saying
is
that.
Very broad. It's a very broad territory. It's a nutty territory. All right. Gonna get right into it. It is about Rand's laughing and crying, and I will just go ahead and start quoting. Quote, I think that Cadswain and Sorrelia, in order to teach Rand to, quote, cry and laugh, will kidnap Elaine's kids and make Rand think that one of the Forsaken did, probably one of the female Forsaken. This will be a devastating emotional blow for Rand. Maybe he will think they're dead, and Rand, in sorrow and volcanic anger, by the way, I like the term volcanic anger, and volcanic anger blows a Forsaken or two into nothingness. That's also a very nice, you know, graphic description. This will solve Rand's harm womanophobia. You got some great language. Harm womanophobia. This will solve Rand's harm womanophobia. After his revenge, there will be layer upon layer of different emotion when he finds out that his children are safe. The man is going to bust from relief. Something like that would make any man cry and laugh all at the same time, probably. End quote. So
it would definitely make someone
Yeah, it would make you, you know, you think your kids are dead, and so you go on a killing rampage, and then all of a sudden they're alive, and you're don't know whether to be sad, angry. I mean, that'd provoke a whole bunch of confused emotions. I certainly can imagine you'd be torn on not knowing exactly how to do it, so you burst out laughing and crying and all at once. I think that, you know, that might actually happen to Rand if something were to happen. My problem with the theory is I don't think that this is something that Cadswain and Sorrelia would do. Sorrelia is an Aiel, and to sort of support the fact that I don't think she'd do it, I remember in Book 6 when they kidnapped Rand and put him in the box and, you know, sort of sent him away. Whenever the Aiel captured the Aes Sedai who did that, they were not so much taken aback and shocked by the brutal and harsh treatment that he, you know, endured by stuffed in a box and taken out only, you know, half an hour a day to be beaten constantly. I mean, that's pretty harsh and pretty awful, but that's not what they balked at. They got upset at the fact that they tricked him to go with them. You see, that was where the Aiel, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, they committed the unpardonable sin, the toe that cannot be forgiven. That was where they really did it. And I don't see them acting in a very subtle or sneaky fashion. It doesn't seem Aiel. It does seem something like Aes Sedai might do. So I think, you know, Cadswain might be able to pull it off. Well, Cadswain might try it. I don't think she could pull it off without someone like Sorrelia, without some of the wise ones, without someone like Min, even, to help. And I can't see any of them going along with this. I can't see Elaine going out, you know, on with this. I think that it's inconsistent with the characters. I certainly think that something like that would provoke Rand to laugh and cry, but I don't think the actual characters would go through with it. So, good theory. But I think it's a little off. What do you guys think?
I can't see either one of them actually doing that, kidnapping his children. For whatever reason, I can't. Like you said about Sorrelia, like, she definitely wouldn't, I don't think she would ever do that. That's like, that's completely, they would, I said I have no honor, you know. You can't, they would, no. And I think that even though Cadswain, yes, she's Aes Sedai and she thinks a little bit differently, like, obviously the Aiel in Aes Sedai always thinking and the way they think of honor and stuff. Aes Sedai are definitely sneaky, but I cannot see her plotting to kidnap Rand's children. Although I do agree with what the results would be. I mean, that would be great, you know, just to see that. I don't think that that's the reason why that'll teach Rand to laugh and cry.
Yeah, I actually kind of have to concur with everybody else, really. Neither of them would do it either. Pretty much on the same grounds, really. Also, Cadswain has this, what do you call it? She just has this, this mannerism where she seems to be disgusted with most other Aes Sedai's methods for doing anything, and I have no idea. It just doesn't seem like something that they would do.
Cadswain is very frank, and I think that's what Soralea admires, that she doesn't, you know, she doesn't snake around. She's just like, okay, you're going to do this. No, I'm not. Oh, yes you are, dear. You don't realize it yet, but you're going to. And that's kind of their style.
I think a lot of this theory, to me anyway, it reminds me of, and I think I mention this every episode, but so what? I think it reminds me of Paul Atreides in Dune, where his first child that he has is killed. And when he finds out about this, this is really at the point where he loses all of his humanity, for better or for worse. And this that's the point where everything turns around for him. And I think that maybe it's a good theory, because at the same time, if Rand thought that something would happen to the twins, and while I don't think that anything actually would, because I don't think the book series could sustain, maybe is the right word, something that tragic to happen to it. But I think that it has some weight, because maybe something to happen with Rand's kids would be something to turn him around and to knock some sense into him, more or less. Whereas in Dune, it was the exact opposite, where that was the point where he lost his humanity. Maybe that's the point where Rand wins his humanity.
I could totally see that. I actually agree. I think we talked about that in one of the earlier podcasts, maybe when we were talking about Elaine, and, you know, it was brought up before about something happening to her children, and because I had this crazy theory that Elaine's kids, the twins, would be the brother and sister from, you know, the hero, two heroes of the horn, and one wears black and one wears red. And do you remember all that? Yeah. But I just don't think that it would be. Yeah. Because it says, I think it says, like, red on black when it's talking about the slopes of Sheol Gul, and it says, like, red on black or something. It makes it sound like blood on the rocks, which it could be, but I was thinking maybe it had something to do with the twins, you know, if that were true. But I just, I think it would actually be one of the Forsaken. I don't think that they would actually kill them or anything, but, you know, I don't know. What could be the real reason, the real thing that, I'm not saying that it's not true, but would make Rand laugh and cry? Maybe just to teach him humility and humanity, you know, just, you're just a man, even though you are so powerful, you are still just a man. You know, he's not a god.
You know, about the entire healing him, or not healing him, but making him laugh and cry, and I guess that's in a way healing, but anyway, I think, my personal opinion, Moraine is going to come in and do something with it, and seeing her, well, that might be his killing woman phobia might help him with that. But I really think that Moraine is going to have some part to play in this. And her coming in, whether it has to do with the twins or not, I think she's going to be a big shock for Rand. And, you know, that, you know, hey, he always, you know, writes her name on the list, you know, of people that he feels guilty about, all the women that have died helping him. And, you know, it'll sort of help him sort of, you know, one, get over his fear of killing women, and two, sort of like, hey, you know, good things are happening, you know, good things happen in spite of me, you know, he messed up, but good things st- still happened. She still survived. Everything's going well, you know. Sort of a, you know, kind of taking the pressure of the world off of him that, okay, if I'm not 100% perfect, I'll still be okay because she's still here, see?
The discussion for this week, we're talking about Loghain, as I've said earlier. Let me go into a brief synopsis of who Loghain is. He's a false dragon. He can channel physically. He's tall. He's handsome. He was born in Geldon. He was born a minor noble. He starts a war there once after he declares himself dragon. He's captured and brought to Camelin, where Rand sees him. It's one of the most memorable scenes in the books to me, myself. He sees Rand, and he can tell that Rand is going to cause a lot of trouble in the future, which ties into a talent that Loghain has, where he can see Tavarin. He's then gentled in Tar Valon at the White Tower. Later in the books, he's a decently major character, although one that sometimes gets overlooked more or less. That's, he's not the one person that everybody talks about the most. But in my opinion, he's going to be one of the people that has the most to do in the final book. He escapes the Battle of the White Tower when Swan is gentled. He also serves as a test subject for Nynaeve to see if she can heal male stilling. And in fact, she does. She ends up healing him to his full power before the gentling. He joins Rand's Black Tower. He does become an Ashaman. Then he leaves the Black Tower, and he reports later to Rand that Tyene has taken control of the Black Tower. He is also there when Semerog attempts to kill Rand, but ends up blowing off his left hand instead with a fireball. But he's there for some major parts of the books, which is really interesting. So that's the long and short of who Loghain is. So I want to start this week, especially with Loghain, because with a new leading question for our discussion. The question is going to be, who does so-and-so remind you of? So who does Loghain remind you of? I'll go first. I think Loghain reminds me of, believe it or not, Gaston from the movie Beauty and the Beast. My daughter and I have watched that movie. God, it's got to be at least 50 times now. And Gaston, to me physically, he is Loghain. What do you guys think?
It's so funny thinking of him as... I could totally see it with... I haven't watched Beauty and the Beast in a long time, but, like, doesn't he have, like, the big boots and the turned down cuffs? Yeah. And stuff, you know what I mean?
The big buff hunter.
And anyone that's seen the movie, I'm going to guarantee you right now, is laughing because they think the same thing. Gaston, this big guy with long, flowing, curly locks of black hair. He's Loghain, arrogant, you know. At the same time, though, Loghain is a little bit minor of a character than Gaston is.
I always thought, I think I said it in when we were doing the movie thing, about, you know, who would play who if there was a Wheel of Time movie. But David Boreanaz, just I always thought that he plays on Bones, and he used to be Angel in that series. But I kind of picture him like if you were, because an Angel, they go back and show him when he had longer hair, you know? But if you can take, let's see, like Mel Gibson from Braveheart and take his hair, you know, like the curly kind of hair, long hair, and then put it on David Boreanaz and make it darker. That's kind of what I picture. Something like that. I don't know why, just that's the closest I can come, like, with somebody that anybody else would, you know, possibly know or recognize.
All right. For me, I'm actually going to sort of fuse a couple characters, too. I'll take what you said, Jason, with Gaston. But Gaston's got, like, this really flamboyant, outgoing personality, and I don't see that as being Loghain. So I'm going to take Gaston and his appearance with the attitude and demeanor of Tom Welling from Smallville. He plays Clark Kent in Smallville. And put his demeanor on Gaston. You know, kind of quiet, stubborn, but subdued, not really, you know, flamboyant. So that's my mental image of Loghain?
Actually, I've had this really, I don't know, odd thing, because I myself always have had this mental picture of Loghain, which doesn't really equate to anyone else. But if I were going to pick people, and I'd go into literature for it instead of the movies, I kind of see him as a fusion between Faramir and Boromir out of the Lord of the Rings series. Particularly because after the gentling that he undergoes, he starts acting in a more noble and more Faramir-like quality, which kind of balances out the false dragon, haughty, kind of nearly selfish-ish, Boromir-ish kind of manner that he also kind of has when we run into him the first few times. So I think it's kind of an even balance in that, maybe throw a little Denethor in there on top of it just to kind of give the entire family a shot at a character.
Will, we usually ask if the character or the discussion of the week is going to survive the last battle, but I think that's also going to tie into another one of my questions. Egwene dreams of Loghain stepping over Rand's body, and then when Egwene tries to touch it, Rand's body shatters like a paper puppet. So how do you think that ties into him surviving the last battle?
I think in that same dream that it wasn't Loghain standing on something black, like a something black, could be a symbol for the Black Tower, or it could be like a podium of some sort. And it also said he was laughing, or
he was laughing.
Yeah,
right?
He was I think it said laughing. While laughing, he stepped over Rand's body, or something. I'm not sure. So, that hasn't happened yet. So, I guess if he will survive the last battle, I'm not sure that's saying, but I know that he'll survive up to the last battle, because I think that, you know, is very important.
I have it pulled up from Encyclopedia Watt. Egwene has a dream that Loghain laughing steps over something onto black stone. It looks like Rand's body, but when she touches his face, it breaks like a paper puppet. So that's the quote. So he does step over something onto a black stone. So the black stone, to me anyway, I feel like the black stone could be the future. You know, I mean, he's stepping over Rand to get to the future, where, to myself, and I've said my own thoughts on this in the past, that once Rand dies, don't anyone gasp, but yes, Rand will die, in my opinion. Loghain steps over Rand, and he actually becomes the hero of everything, and he becomes, not that he becomes the Dragon Reborn, but he becomes the person that leads everybody through the time after the last battle, and Rand makes a sacrifice, and Loghain is left to be king, or be whatever he's going to be, but he's going to take all the glory for everything that happened.
I think he's going to take glory, because we know that from Min's vision of him, but I think that it's going to be with leading the Black Tower. But I don't think that's because Rand is away, because Rand's dead, sorry, away. Because I think my version of it was always in my mind that he's stepping over Rand's body, you know, to lead the Black Tower, because everyone, but it's not really Rand, because he shatters. So it's like a vision, like everyone's supposed to think Rand is dead, but he's not. That's what I think. I don't think he's going to die. He is not going to die.
A fake death.
Rand will live. I know everyone thinks he's going to die, but maybe he will. Everyone's either going to think he's dead, or he will die. Like, I think I'm sure I've mentioned this before. And Olivia, right? Or, yeah, Olivia, like, starts with an A. She's the one who's supposed to help Rand to die. Mm-hmm. She must know there's something that she's going to be able to help him, maybe, to fake his own death. Like, possibly be able to make it look like he's dead, even though he's not, or bring him back, or something. They always say, I did think it would be Nynaeve, because they always say, oh, death can't be healed, and just like stealing can't be healed and everything else.
Yeah.
So maybe that could be Nynaeve, but maybe Olivia is going to play some type of, you know, role where she has to do a certain part in order to make it so everyone thinks Rand is dead.
Yeah, you know, I've heard both of your theories, and they both sound good, and this is going to sound like a total cop-out, but for some reason I think you both have it kind of wrong, and I can't say why. It just seems like, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like it's really that consistent with it. One, I think Luz Theron has to come into the picture at some point. Whenever you talk about Rand dying, I think you have to talk about Luz Theron right along with it, because they're so closely connected, and all of Rand's death stuff has to do with Luz Theron. So whenever you talk about Loghain stepping over Rand, if that actually represents his death, I think it sort of ignores Luz Theron, and I don't think you can do that. Beyond that, I can't really explain why I think that. It just doesn't seem all that consistent with everything else we've heard.
But maybe the whole reason why they have to kill Rand and bring him back is to get rid of Luz Theron.
That could be it. But how would Loghain play a part of that? Is all of a sudden Luz Theron going to go into Loghain's head? That would be really crazy.
I don't know. I can't see that either. I just think he'll just disappear, you know, and be at peace. Like, he's dead. I realize that Rand is him kind of, you know, like, reincarnated, but at the same time, Luz Theron should be able to have peace. You know, he should be able to, wherever, you know, in the Randland, if they have some type of afterlife or someplace, something happens after they die, they have a creator, you know. Luz Theron should be able to be at peace. So maybe if he
go to Tel-Ariad,
you know, but he's not one of the heroes, but I guess because he's the dragon, yeah, he could. But he deserves it. Like, it's not fair for him to be trapped in Rand's head, you know, and trying to fight for possession of the body. I think that he should be at peace somewhere, knowing who he is and not crazy. And maybe there's some way to do, like, an exorcism. Not in a bad way, saying that he's, you know, a demon or whatnot, but just as if, you know, to get him out of Rand's body. And the only way to do that is to kill him, and they need Olivia for whatever reason.
Well, I don't know. I think at some point you'd have to bring in Semirog and Grendel, because they seem to know a whole lot about it. And Semirog's captured now, so I think she's going to be, you know, somewhat significant in helping this process along, because Cad Swain's going to get some answers out of her, because Cad Swain can. And by the way, that's going to be awesome in book 12 when she does get those answers. But I think that's going to be, you know, significant too, in that all of these people are influencing Rand. How does Loghain actually fit into it? I don't know. I think in some way, I think, you know, it's pretty obvious the symbolism is that he's going to take over something of his, step over, go beyond him, and I don't know, it might be the Black Tower, it might be something else, I really don't. It's embarrassing to say I don't know, but I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. The entire thing with Egwene's dream, it seems to me, and this has always been my impression, the false Rand, the one that shatters, as I've always equated that with time, mainly because there was something early on in the Black Tower where someone pointed out that the tower wasn't really Rand's anymore. They know, or the Ashaman and the soldiers and the dedicated know Time's face, and they don't know Rand. And so as a result, you know, Time's kind of the leader. And I always remember them having that one black cut block of stone that they used for a podium that the Mihail or whoever would speak from if they were speaking. And I kind of always saw that, you know, at some point Time's got to be put down, and Loghain's going to be happy about that, because it's really obvious Loghain hates Maesram, and that, you know, just kill him off and I get to take over the tower, or the Black Tower now, and ha 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 ha. And it's always been kind of a little pet theory. I do think he'll survive the last battle, and I think he's, going to be a major player on the political scene, or, you know, just even the world scene after the last battle's done with. You know, maybe be a king himself or something.
We're running pretty long on time here, so if anybody's still listening, which hopefully people are, we're going to wrap up this episode of The Fourth Age. We really do hope everyone enjoyed our one-year anniversary show.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Please remember to leave us feedback by calling our feedback line, and it's 1-888-333-7690.
Yes, and we also have an email address that I hope you know by now. It is podcast@dragonmount.com. Please send your feedback, your comments, and anything else you would like to say to us, send it to that address. We'd be glad to hear it.
And, of course, you can always check out the show at our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/fourthage. Also, if you don't have an access to our 800 number, you can leave us a simple audio message there, as long as you've got a mic to record on your computer. You can also get the show from our host server, www.dragonmount.com/podcast, or the iTunes link, which is also available at dragonmount.com. Just like to remind everybody about what's coming up in the next couple of episodes. In our next episode, we will be discussing the Aiel. The episode following that, we will be covering Min. And in three episodes, we're going to go ahead and take a hard look at some people's favorite character, which would be Nynaeve.
And with that, I'm going to say goodbye to everyone, and I'll leave everybody with a quote. There must be some kind of way out of here.
Take care, everybody.
Blessed be you all in the light.
Walk in the light.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@dragonmount.com. The music for our podcast is brought to you by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.
If any of that survived editing, I will be so surprised, and I'm sorry for you listeners that had to hear it.